Today is the 25th of November 2015, and I'm here to speak with Geraldine Schenken, who is going to tell me a little about her mother, Mrs. Marion Grant. Geraldine, do you want to begin by reading a little from your mother's own story in her own words?
This is from her book. She made a book called I Knew I Was Painting for My Life, which includes her Holocaust artworks by my mum, Marianne Grant. So she starts by saying her story. My name is Marion Grant Nee Herman, nicknamed Mousy, from Prague. That was in Czechoslovakia. My father came from a small village, Serema, near Sadek in the Sudetenland, North Bohemia. He was the son of hop farmers from a family of 10 children. From the age of 8, he lodged with a cantor in Prague in order to get a proper education. He became the foreign exchange manager of the Bohemian Union Bank in Prague. He met my mother, the youngest of three sisters, when he was sent to a branch in Bielsko, which after the First World War became part of Poland. She was the daughter of a cantor, Moritz Rosner, and his wife Cecilia from Moravia. My mother, Anna, was a milliner, and she married my father in 1920. They settled in Prague, and I was born in September 1921. We lived in the centre of the town in a small flat for 7 or 8 years. Then we moved to new flats built by the bank for their employees near vast, beautiful parks.
I gather from what you've read that your mother had quite an easy life before the war changed everything.
Yes. She went to a primary school, and when she went on to girls' high school, she was sent to a private English grammar school. And then later on, after much persuasion by her father's three sisters and her mother, her father relented and gave his permission for her to attend the famous Rote Schule of Fashion and Graphic Design in Prague.
Because your mother was always interested in drawing.
She loved drawing in her spare time, loved to do little sketches, and with all the way through her childhood and in her teenage days with children, loved wherever she went. She liked to draw, and she loved nature study, all lovely things. She liked to just draw or paint.
And why was her father not keen on her doing this at first anyway? Do you know?
I'm not really very sure, to be honest, at why. He probably wanted her to probably go down a more educational route. I think she was pretty bright. She spoke 6 languages fluently later in life, and he probably thought that she could do something, maybe become a lawyer or a doctor, and not go into the world of the art world.
That's interesting. And life obviously changed very significantly for your mother.
Well,
in the 1930s,
it did. My mother was an only child, and in 1938, her father died. And that was a few months before the occupation of Czechoslovakia by the Germans. And when that happened, they had to leave the very nice district that they lived in, the lovely area. And that was only then used by ethnic Germans, and they had to move across the river, Vltava, and live in a very small flat. And she said that a lot of her relatives lived in that area as well, so it wasn't too terrible for them.
And then things got worse. When was that?
At the end of 1941, they were forced to wear the yellow star with Judah on it to point out that they were the Jewish people. And from then on, life became pretty difficult. Before that, my grandma had bought my mum a capitalist certificate, which paid for 2 years in Jerusalem's famous Bezalel Art School. But she didn't want to leave her mum, and she cried and cried. And eventually they gave the chance for another person to use their certificate.
So she could have escaped.
She could have left Prague at that time and gone to Jerusalem. But she didn't want to be separated from her mother.
And her mother by this time was a widow.
She was a widow, yes. Her father died before the war began. And as I said, in 1941, they all had to start to wear the yellow star to identify who they were. And because of her love of art and graphic design, she taught Jewish girls privately at home to earn some extra money. She taught them some fashion design. She did it secretly and was teaching them how to sew lingerie and all different things, but always on the quiet.
You didn't get into trouble.
She didn't get into trouble because you really shouldn't have been doing that, I presume.
So she was courageous, frightened.
Yeah, she was. She had quite a lot of, I think, feistiness in her. She was quite a strong lady. Mm-hmm. My mum was a very stubborn lady, and the stubbornness, as you'll hear in her story, helped save her life and my grandma's life, her mum's life. Well, that and her art.
What happened?
Well, on the 28th of April 1942, they were taken to an exhibition centre in Prague, where they were kept on the floor overnight. And then the next day they were sent by normal trains to the ghetto of Theresienstadt. Theresienstadt was a fortress built by the Empress Maria Theresa, and it was used for the Czech army. It was the army barracks for the Czech army. So they were put in the military barracks, and which obviously they had vacated, and they'd got all the Jewish people now there, and they were allocated a room that was tiny, probably about, I'm not too sure, but I know her, she used to say that her actual space that she had on the floor was about 3 feet by 6 feet that was allocated to her and my grandma, and there was about 40 people in the room, so you can imagine how tight it was, how congested, and that her living space. In fact, one of the paintings that she did was in lovely colour, that you can see that the bits of clothing and things that they were able to take to Theresienstadt, she's put a curtain, a bit of material to hide, to make it try and look like a wee bit home-like, to try. She always tried her best in every possible way.
And did she bring art materials with her? Was she able to do that?
I'm not sure whether she brought art material with her there or she was given them there. She may have possibly brought, because they were allowed a few possessions, so it's very possible that she did. I would probably think that she did. She was preparing for being sent away. They knew that they would be sent away, and they were preparing. I know that she made with bechamel sauce, you melt margarine and flour and you make a thick paste, that she put notes and things inside, she hid and sewed it into the lining of her coat. She was preparing ahead in case of hard times ahead.
So this was money that she was hiding?
Yes, money. Right. Anything valuable. Mm-hmm. She was a very intelligent lady who thought ahead.
And they knew what was coming.
Well, they didn't know exactly what was coming, but they knew it wasn't good and that there was a lot of talk, and that was the start of her horrific journey going to Theresienstadt, and that was, as I say, April 1942.
And what happened? Do you know what happened to her there in Theresienstadt?
Well, yes. When she was in Theresienstadt, she chose to work in agriculture, as she was told it was more lucrative than the art department, as she could exchange second-class vegetables for bread and other rations. And she became second in charge of the youth garden, where there were girls aged 12 to 17 that were working there. And in her spare time after working, she would do some sketching and painting. She would go there with a friend. And she also went to the mock cafes. You know, in Theresienstadt, it was very much that they made it look like it was a propaganda camp, that it to look to the Red Cross like it was actually like a holiday camp, where in fact it was obviously the opposite. And so she would go and she would draw the Austrian, the old Austrian and German Jews. They had a lot of elderly people there that had actually even paid money They thought they'd gone to a holiday camp. Most of them, they perished, you know, from typhoid and enteritis through malnutrition.
So these mock cafes were places you sat, but you didn't get anything to use?
Absolutely nothing. Nothing. It was just to look the part. When they moved the entire Czech population out of Theresienstadt because of the overcrowding, the empty houses were used for the Jews.
Oh, I see. So people had previously been living there?
Yes.
I see. But obviously far fewer than came in after that.
Yeah.
Was she there a long time in Theresienstadt?
She was in Theresienstadt, 18th of December 1943. So that was 19, 20 months in Theresienstadt.
But then she was transported somewhere else?
Well, my grandmother was summoned three times to go on the train, which was to the east. They didn't actually even know where the east was, that it was actually to Auschwitz. And three times my mum managed to get her released to get her off the train, but the fourth time it just wasn't possible, and she was taken onto the cattle wagon. My mum said that she rushed back to the house, she left her artwork with a friend, grabbed a few belongings and jumped in the train, but she wasn't on the same wagon as my mother, just a separate compartment. And it took days, no food, no drink, just a bucket in the corner to relieve themselves. When the train stopped in darkness, they were surrounded with the SS, the killer dogs, black Dobermans shouting, "Raus, raus," they were shouting, the soldiers, "out, out." And my mum searched all through the night, all night. And eventually they were reunited at dawn.
It must have been terrifying.
Horrific. You can't really imagine. They were dying, they were all dying in the wagon. People just dropped in the cattle wagons, literally. Not trains, cattle wagons. And then when they, as you know, the story, when they were arrived, they were separated, and those to the left and those to the right, they were there, who was going to live and who should die, making their decisions. And the next day they were taken to a building where Polish women shouted orders for them to strip off all their clothing, and they were herded outside into the bitter cold of the Polish winter. The German SS officers with their black high boots, they were ordering them, going past them. And afterwards she found out that the one with probably the shiniest boots was Dr. Josef Mengele. He was the experimentation doctor. He had a leather whip in his hand and he just pointed them to the left and to the right and condemned them immediately to death, to be gassed in the gas chambers. The others were spared and they were sent to the block houses, and men and women lived, you know, were in separate blocks.
I suppose your grandmother was young enough to be picked for life then. She wouldn't have been old either.
You can work it out. But she wasn't terribly old, no. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't as fit as my mother, obviously, for work in the camp. Yeah. Both of them were sent to the family camp, Auschwitz-Birkenau, and they settled into one of the long cement brick blocks at timber walls, and there they slept on planks, literally planks with straw mattresses. And every night they took their shoes off. And one morning, Mum said that hers were missing. They went missing while under her sleeping plank. And then she received canvas clogs. And her toes got frozen. They were black and septic. And that, unfortunately, she suffered with that for the rest of her life. That affected her. Because they had to stand for hours in the freezing cold for roll call, and obviously the canvas wasn't good enough. She was called upon to look after the children who were separated from their mums. They were put in the children's block with the children.
She was lucky in a way to be picked for that, wasn't she?
Yes, I suppose the children, you know, were sadly taken there, and they were really only there for up to about 3 months before they gassed them, because the children were of no use to the Germans. And She'd try to make their life a bit better, where she secretly taught them painting and nature study. And the Germans kept the children's block in comparative comfort. They tried. They had a bit thicker soup, and they were given all sorts of materials like papers and pens and so on. There were even tables and rough benches, the height of absolute luxury, she said.
It seems strange when they were going to murder them soon after.
Maybe Mum used to say that some had a bit of feeling, a bit of compassion towards the Jewish people, and they were under their orders. They had to do things whether they liked it or not. So I think some of them showed a bit of compassion by trying to make it a little bit better for the children.
It's interesting.
The SS, they would come frequently to visit and amuse themselves with the children as they were bored stiff in this desolate part of the world. And one of these SS was a Slovak collaborator who spotted my mum's drawings, and he commissioned her to make a hand-painted fairy tale book for his children. And he took her to the gypsy camp. You know, they had a gypsy camp as well in Auschwitz. And she painted a beautiful, with oil paints, a beautiful gypsy girl for this SS soldier's wife. And one day when he came to look for her again in the block, he couldn't find her because she wasn't there. And then he went to find her in her own block, and she was lying ill with pleurisy and terrible boils, and with her mother. And he demanded that he saw to see the Jewish doctor. There was a Jewish doctor in every block, and as my mum had no medication,
these doctors were not given any medication.
No, they had nothing to give, absolutely nothing. But this SS man, he brought her extra bread and butter necessities, and so he actually saved her life by giving her more nutrition.
Because he liked the way she painted.
Yes, he wanted her, he was happy with her, he pleased her, and I think he wanted her to do more artwork for him. And through all this, news travelled fast to the notorious SS doctors. I've already mentioned Dr. Josef Mengele, who did horrific medical experiments on inmates, horrific. And she was ordered to draw different markings on children, on twins who had skin markings or anything. And another time he came, they used to send little boys, she would say. They were called laufers. A laufer is in German means to run, to lauf. And he would send them to, they were boys in their striped like pyjama suit. And she said that later on she found out they were very abused boys that they used. And when these boys came to get you from the block, you just went instantly. You ran. When Mengele wanted you, you went. And she said that she would, you know, she did all different things. She did research on the dwarves. He took her to the dwarf camp, and she was taken to his hut. Mum used to say that there wasn't a bird that flew past. There wasn't a tree that grew in Auschwitz. Not a tree. So a bird didn't fly because there was no trees, and the mud was yellow mud. And in his hut, he had this most beautiful Persian rug that was lying on top of this yellow mud, where he just paced up and down in his high leather shiny boots, and he just pointed at her, instructing her what to do. And she said she was shaking, and she knew if she made an ink blob, a mistake or whatever, she'd have been finished. She knew her life. And that's why her book, she named it, I Knew I Was Painting for My Life. But he gave her an architect's tool set to draw the Hungarian dwarf families in black ink. I don't know where her strength and courage came from, you know, because I can't imagine the situation.
She must have seen the most horrible things.
Awful on children, you know. But what she did try to do, she got permission and got materials to paint on the wall of the children's block, because, as I said earlier, that they were really there. The maximum that the children were kept in Auschwitz was for 3 months. She wanted to decorate the children's block with the walls. There was nothing, no colour. So she was allowed to. It was actually, they gave permission as it was for the benefit of the British Red Cross. And she painted Mickey Mouse and Bambi and Minnie Mouse and all the children of the world, Chinese children, Indian, Eskimo, trees, flowers, mushrooms. It was partly educational and also just to brighten the environment, to give them a bit of colour in their lives. And in 1997, my mother, by memory, which is amazing, by memory, she made a replica for the exhibition called No Child's Play, Children of the Holocaust. She made it for Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Centre in Jerusalem, Israel.
Because the original was lost then, I assume?
No, well, the original was painted directly on the wall. It was on the wall of the children's block.
And that was destroyed after the war?
Yes. Well, I mean, my mum and my grandma were very fortunate as to say that they were in Auschwitz for 6 or 7 months. Very few people were sent out of Auschwitz
alive.
But I'd like to just mention before that one of the horrific times that Mum did later on talk about was on the 8th of March 1944. When the whole camp went numb, when you couldn't hear a sound, everything, not emotion, nothing. And the Schreiber, the person who writes, to Schreib is to write, it's a privileged Jewish person in his blue and pyjama suit and the striped cap, when they would take note of each person's tattoo, because you know when you entered Auschwitz, everybody was given a tattoo in their arm. You weren't a name, you were a number. And everything was deadly quiet. There was no selection. You could smell the stench of burning flesh and hair, because the arrival of the people before my mum, every person, that whole selection, every person was taken to the gas chambers. And they worked, the gas ovens just worked all through the night. It was just horrific when the whole place was emptied out.
So that's what was happening, that a whole block...
Yes, the transport that had arrived before my mother's was completely... They were completely taken away. Everyone was sent to the gas chamber.
And do you know why specifically that one happened?
They just... I think they just had their quota of numbers that they just wanted to get rid of, and so be it. No, I don't think there was any reason... And so can you imagine living through that, and you can smell the stench of burning flesh and hair, and you're living through that, and you're living next on top of that in these circumstances. It's just unimaginable. In the filth and the smells. I remember my mum going with me to see Schindler's List. That's the most wonderful film that was made several years ago. And yes, to the everyday person, it's great to see and gives a very good insight on what happened in the concentration camps. But my mum came away and she turned and said to me, "But you can't smell anything. There's no smell." And that's a hard thing to visualise. The British government turned their backs, really. They didn't believe what was happening, the atrocities that were going on in the world. I don't think they believed. I'm jumping ahead of myself, but I know that when my mother at the end, I've not come to that part of her story, but at the very end of my mother was at the very end, she was taken to Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, and she said you could hear the ground trembling for days when the British army was approaching. The Germans had already surrendered, the white flags were out, and when the British army arrived under Field Marshal Montgomery, and they were like, the British soldiers, some of them were absolutely traumatised at what they saw. The camp was barely functioning. She just couldn't believe some of them. In fact, one of the a Dr. Sean Stiles actually looked after my grandma. She was rather poorly at the end by this time, and he insisted that both my mother and my grandma went on a Red Cross boat to Malmo in Sweden. That would be where the best medical treatment. He gave them good advice, and we found out only recently that this Dr. Sean Stiles, I can't remember how it was a a nephew, some relation, a cousin's nephew, or I don't know, got in touch with my sister, and he died early. He never married or had children. He was very traumatized, and he died in the early 60s. He was completely traumatized by what he saw.
At Belsen.
In Bergen-Belsen.
Let's go back to what happened before she went there. She was in Auschwitz, she said, for 7 months. Yes.
So Mum was in Auschwitz from December 1943 to July 1944.
And then in 1944?
Well, happened? In 1944, yet again, they were taken to the sauna, the gas chambers.
That's what they called it,
sauna. The sauna, the gas chambers, stripped of everything. And the SS women who were checking their tattoos, they secretly belonged to the Communist Party, and they assured them that they would get through selection and not be gassed. And they were correct. After the showers, the SS began the selection, the able ones to one side, the children and the weak to the other. And the able ones, like my mother, were given overalls. They were put in trains and sent to Germany as slave labourers.
With her own mother still?
Yes. She was with her mum. And they were under the SS Neugamma concentration camp. And they were in a work camp.
What did you do there?
They were in the water site. They were near Hamburg Harbour. They were to do any kind of labouring. They were digging trenches or the bases for the foundations for new housing. That was in Neugraben near Hanover. There they were digging the trenches for new houses and for air raid shelters. And while they were doing that, they were being bombed. The bombs were going on overhead and many were killed, and it was a very, very difficult time. But when they were under the supervision of the SS Neugamma concentration camp, they were in Neugraben work camp, where a few of the women were sent back to Auschwitz because they were pregnant, so they sent to their death, basically. And they managed, one girl managed to stay because she worked in the SS office, and she gave birth to a healthy baby boy who was instantly put to sleep by their Jewish doctor, Goldie, under SS order. And they were all, she said, they were all in shock and in mourning that had to happen. So, although they were not in Auschwitz, still the horrors were taking place. And I must tell you the one nice story that she was, as they were digging the foundations for the new houses there was a young German mother befriended my mum, and sometimes over the fence she handed her a sandwich or an apple. And as a thank you, my mum made her a caricature of this actual woman with her baby in the pram and gave it to her. And many years later, a copy of this picture appeared after the war. It was in the local housing association. It was in their 25th, their 40th and their 50th anniversary magazines. And somehow or other it got to my mum. And that was actually later on, it was used that this family, it was that they had actually been good to the Jewish people. It became important for them. It was like, you know, verification of that they'd actually been, that she'd been a nice lady and that she'd helped, that she wasn't behaving like a Nazi.
I see. But it means that the camp must have been in the town then, that people would have seen what was going on.
This was in the area where they were digging the new foundations. It was a new housing area that they were developing.
Right. So people would have seen the
condition.
So they
would see
the
yes, they would see. They weren't interested, and they were all under the S. They were all under Hitler, and just as we all know, they did what they were told to do. Otherwise, they themselves would be probably sent away.
Yeah. They probably were struggling to survive in their own ways.
Yes,
well.
They also had it difficult in certain ways. So they were there, but once again, art helped save my mum and my grandma's life, because during that horrible winter, she was asked to paint the German headquarters where... she got inside work to paint the building, and again, you know, safe from the dreadful freezing winter, and was, I suppose, that helped save her in many ways.
Strange that some this one talent kept her alive.
Yep, art. It certainly did. And they were slave labourers till early April 1945, not long before the end of the war, where they were then sent to another horrific camp, Camp of Bergen-Belsen.
And was she sent in one of these things they call the Death March?
Yes,
there?
She was partly by train and partly by foot where she marched. And when they got to Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, she said they were greeted with the sight of dead bodies, typhoid, lice, starvation. The whole camp was just horrendous. They were shocked to see the piles and piles of dead bodies that were everywhere. The SS were already wearing their white armbands as a sign of surrender. And they found a place in a wooden hut in which people were dead, and the dead dying all around her. And in order to protect themselves, they had to check their clothes every day to make sure that they were free of lice, as they were the carriers, she said, of disease. The kitchens weren't functioning anymore, and they had to fend for themselves to get any scraps to eat. I think she dug like potato and beetroot from the ground she found, and I think she says that she shared a beetroot every day with her mother. She shared a raw beetroot.
She had a tremendous will to live.
Yep, she went a bit crazy, she said, and she started to paint all the dead bodies and the dead all round her. Between the beautiful birch trees, she painted a beautiful young red-headed girl that, you know, that's one of her paintings that left her artwork for the Kelvin Grove Art Gallery Museum in Glasgow, because she felt that people should never forget, that it should be a teaching point, that many people should see, but because she'd had a good life in Glasgow, she wanted to give a little something back to Glasgow, to the city of Glasgow.
And this girl in the picture, I assume, was dead?
Yes, she was dead, but my mum saw the beauty in her, caught her eye. She said for days the earth was just trembling. You know, you could hear under Field Marshal Montgomery the tanks arriving, and he liberated Bergen-Belsen on the 15th of April 1945. And I think I said earlier how shocked the British Army were. They were just, they'd never seen such human misery in all their life. I mean, and actually, through their kindness of distributing their own rations, they didn't realise at the time that actually they ended up that many people died as a result, because the food was far too rich. Many perished. They couldn't digest the rich food that they gave them. But of course, nobody was wise enough at that time to know that they had such emaciated bodies, and they were desperate to eat whatever they were given. And sadly, many died as a result of the food being far too rich at the time. And they arrived, it was in Malmo in the summer of 1945, with their very meagre possessions. And they were disinfected with DDT before they disembarked. And it was the Jewish community that took an interest in them, and some of them were invited to homes, and even They even put on a show for them, and they were taken from Malmö to a camp of wooden chalets to a forest near Gothenburg. And my grandma was taken to a sanitarium and was nursed, thank goodness, back to good health. And my mum made friends with a shoe manufacturer, a gentleman called Herbert Sterner, who came with his eldest daughter to visit my mum. Her name was Mira. And my mum and Mira, they became lifelong friends. She used to come and visit her refugee camp.
It must have been such an up and down journey for your mother from horrors to rescue.
Yep, but you know, she pulled through. By November 1945, she made her first exhibition of her Bergen-Belsen drawings and watercolours and sold stuffed toys that she made. And there were very good reviews about her in the Gothenburg newspapers. And she also worked there in the graphic studio and design. And her mother later joined her in the camp when she was well. And she got a job as a milliner in a large store, a large department store. And between them, they had enough money to keep themselves. And eventually they settled properly in Gothenburg and moved to a lovely flat just outside the city, where my mum established her own studio designing hand-painted Christmas mats and table decorations. And she even managed to employ a few girls eventually. And then my grandma gave up work and looked after my mum, like in those days, like a mother did.
Yeah. And she was a breadwinner, your mum. So
yes.
That's why.
She painted lovely things. I've got some of the mats are on display in the Kelvin Grove Art Gallery. When we were children, there was always this big trunk in our loft that we were not really allowed to touch. And inside it was some of the hand-painted mats that she made at the time in Sweden. Absolutely beautiful. The way she cut them in beautiful shapes, sculpted them. And yes, it was her view of her meagre, amazing possessions that she had. And in Theresienstadt, she left things with a friend who managed to keep a few of her drawings from then and from Prague, and she managed to get some of her things were returned to her. She got them back.
But she lost everything, I believe, from Auschwitz. None of that survived.
From Auschwitz, no. That's why she did it by the freeze was by memory. Nothing survived. And it's a happy ending, otherwise I wouldn't be here telling the story.
And she met your father?
She met my father. My mum made a good friend in Sweden, and her friend Margit, her German-born husband Helmut, he died at a young age, and they had a baby, a little son. And she went to Glasgow to take her baby to visit the baby's grandmother, who was a lady called a Mrs. Zilberman, who lived in Brumar Street in Battlefield in Glasgow. And when Margit was visiting her mother-in-law, she met this German refugee who lodged with Mrs. Zilberman, and she gave him my mum's address, and they started to write to each other, and the romance began. And he came to visit my mum in the summer of 1951. And then they went with her and my grandma for a holiday in Bestadt on the coast. And they got engaged. It all happened very quickly. And in the autumn of 1951, my mum and my grandma came to Glasgow, and they were married in London. And that's the life began.
And your father was a minister of the synagogue here?
He was. My father became a reverend, a minister, and I think that was due to the fact that the only person my father, having left in his teens Germany, he'd left all his family behind, the only other person that he got to know that knew him from his past was his teacher at Jewish school, was a rabbi, Joseph Dinner, who was a very, very religious, high-figured gentleman who was now established in London. And I think through his influence, he went to study and went down this road of becoming a minister.
It must have been hard after the experience of both your father and your mother to have a belief.
That's one of the things, actually, that I find very hard to believe, that after all the atrocities that my mother endured, after the years of hardship and what she saw, how she had any faith left in her body to give, I don't know. And Judaism was practiced, obviously, in our home to quite a high degree, with my father being head of the synagogue. Therefore, to this day, I find it quite unbelievable that she had all this belief that she had, you know, and so much. And she was wonderful. She very much took the place of the minister's wife and did a lot of work in the community for many, many years. And it was actually only after my father sadly died, quite a young man, after everything that he'd gone through. He died just age 65, which today is relatively young. Mm-hmm. He sadly got ill and was dead 2.5 weeks later. He was just going to retire, and I felt they were denied that time of peace and tranquility for them with their family, that we'd grown up now and that they didn't get this time. And it was really only after my father's death at the end of 1986 that my mum really started to tell her story. It was only after then. We were sheltered. They wanted to protect us. Yes, with certain things we couldn't leave in her plate, and certain things were different. And I mean, I think we're all a wee bit neurotic, and I'm affected with the fact that I can't go near gas cookers, gas flames. Anything, the smell makes me want to retch. So obviously, as a child growing up, I knew that my mother had been in the gas chamber several times, but I thought of it as the gas flame, and I didn't know it was Cyclone B powder until I was older. And I think that's just left its mark on me. It was only, I think I was married quite a wee while before I could even strike a match to light a candle. And you know, in the Jewish religion, we like to bring in the Sabbath to light our Shabbos candles, and I just found it very difficult. It was a very difficult thing for me to do.
Hard thing to know your mother suffered.
Very hard. But as children, I suppose we knew we weren't allowed to leave anything on our plates. No food was to be wasted. Nothing in our home could be wasted. Every envelope was written on, every the back. I've even actually got my 10-year-old birthday card somewhere here. And inside, if you open it up, in every bit, my mum has used every bit of paper for it. I think she was getting new curtains made, and she's got the measurements written down, or for a shopping list. Every newspaper that came in to our home was reused, the paper was reused, whether it be for lighting the fire or wrapping up her precious flower bulbs for in the winter to protect them. No matter what, it was reused in every way possible. Everything. We had a stool, I always remember in the kitchen, we had a stool that had a shelf underneath it, and that all the papers would be kept. If somebody wanted a paper from 3 weeks ago past Friday, I'll say, we'll have it. But things were kept quite quiet, in a sense, in my early years, because my grandmother lived with us in our home. It was very difficult. My father had a very big background. He came from Germany, well, from Königsberg, it was East Prussia. And he came about the age of 17. His parents managed to get a visa to Britain for him in 1938. But his little brother and his parents didn't make it out. They were gassed. They were sent to the gas chambers, he later found out. And imagine being a young teenager and you're sent away and you're coming to somewhere you've never been and all on your own. It was too painful, I think, for my parents to discuss their past experiences, really. In her early years, it was very difficult. And also, they spoke quite a lot of German in the house with my grandma, and I was a bit embarrassed at the time. German to me in those days when I grew up, I mean, I'm talking about maybe when I was more aware of it in the late 60s, early 70s, it was like such an ugly language, and people didn't really want to talk about the war. It was only later on in life in Britain it was much more acceptable. but it's, you know, now it's all a lot easier. I think that certain things are definitely passed from generation to generation, but sadly the world hasn't learned. We've learned from the Holocaust. There's been so many other horrendous goings on in the world, and Rwanda and everywhere with the refugees. It's just horrific. Of what, nothing really has changed, sadly.
Do you think, as really as a last question, do you think your mother remained optimistic about life? How was she in herself after all these events that she lived through?
She had a great sense of humour. She was a very stubborn lady, that said her stamina and her stubbornness kept her going, and determined. She was determined, because later in life she had very bad osteoporosis, but still insisted in walking to synagogue on a Saturday. She would see always the good, you know, she would always push. But she didn't trust people. A lot of times she would say to me, the police can be crooked. It was a hard thing for her. How could she trust anybody? When she arrived in Auschwitz, I know there was a young boy, when they were in Prague, before she was taken away, they used to have to take in certain people to their homes for lunch. That was one of the stipulations. And there was a lovely boy that used to go to her house. And he was one of the boys that first came across in Auschwitz, and he whispered to her, "Have you got any valuables? Have you got any valuables, Mousie? I'll get them. I'll keep them for you safe." And he did keep his word. She gave him a few things, and he did come and find her, and he gave them back, which obviously probably helped in certain ways to save her and my grandma's life as well. However, his sister, he had a horrible sister, and this woman was now dressed, she said, in the heaviest warm coat and special leather boots and the best clothes, and in the midst of the darkness of Auschwitz. And she ignored her. She turned her back on my mum, because she was already in charge. She was one of these Jewish women that were whipping the Jews. Jews whipped the Jews, you know, that because she got extra...
Rations
only for herself. So I think that my mum couldn't believe that somebody could become like that, and I think my mother's trust in people was sometimes a bit weary, a bit difficult, which is very understandable.
Certainly is. Thank you for sharing your mother's story with us this afternoon.
Thank you.